Welcome to episode 8 of our podcast. This one's another interview one. We're on a roll here with interviews. We were able to have the pleasure and the opportunity to talk with Matt Walsh, who is the founder of Noted Analytics, a startup company. And it was great talking with him about a few things as it relates to building great teams. You know, one was the idea of how he left kind of a big corporation in SAP and went on his own because he followed his passion a little bit. And we talk about that quite a bit. Also a lot about, you know, we get into the idea of empathy when you build your team, and you know, the way he goes about doing it as well, and like including an engineer in a sales call as an example, or sitting in and watching engineers, they start to develop something so you can both understand what each other's going through. It reminded me a lot of one of our past episodes where we talked a lot about, there was an example I gave one time when I was working with Kellogg's where the food folks, you know, couldn't believe that the marketing folks were giving them all these bad ideas, and the marketing folks couldn't understand what the food folks weren't delivering on all these great ideas they were giving. And, you know, it was such a simple change to just invite one of the food folks into that development process. And they then realized what we went through. We understood and got a download of what they look for and what their capacity issues are and how they go about doing it. And not only that, but then we had a champion on our team once we all created a great idea together. It was just that one simple change of empathy and inclusion that that made all the difference in the world. And so I think that comes through in Matt's interview. I also really liked his creation of Never Lunch Alone. You know, I think that,
right,
that sounds like very aspirationally, but I love that he, in the idea of building a team and building a business, that he got into some content development ideas. And yet from that, because he is so kind of genuine and authentic, he found that he learned a ton from that process. And it became, and I sat there thinking, I'm doing this right now. You know, we're talking with folks because we really think of them as great leaders and people that we want to talk with. But and we're doing it to be able to share that with our audience, for sure. But I'm also learning or having things reinforced that we agree with and that we kind of espouse as well. It's kind of nice to see other people espousing it in slightly different ways, but in ways that really propel their teams ahead. So I love the conversation.
Yeah, it was great. And without further ado, we'll get right into that interview with Matt Walsh, and we hope you enjoy it. Matt Walsh, thank you for joining us here on the Amplified podcast. We're thrilled to have you. And for our listeners, we've invited Matt. Matt is a graduate of Villanova University, an MBA from the University of London, the Royal Holloway School, and founder of Noted Analytics, as well as the host of the networking, podcast, or I don't know if it's a podcast or video series of Never Lunch Alone. Matt, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely, Eric. Or you could say worldwide phenomenon. You know, never. No, I'm just kidding. I wish.
Because you've been helping countries with never Lunch Alone.
Exactly. No, so, guys, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm very excited to join.
Well, Matt, tell us. I know I briefed the background. Tell us a little bit about your professional background, and then ultimately the decision to go out on your own, be an entrepreneur, and start your business of Noted Analytics.
Yeah, that crazy idea, right, of starting your own business. Sure.
If you get a scratch every once in a while, and you're like, okay, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to build it.
And that was a lot of it. It was an itch I had to scratch. If not now, when? If not me, who? You know, a lot of that was what pushed me over the edge. But prior to that, out of school, I liked the idea of having a business degree, but also technical experience, technical skill set. So I went into consulting. I was doing SAP consulting. I worked for SAP in pre-sales role, so doing demos, pretty technical demos. Then a sales role, then a pseudo sales operations role, running reports. And I think it was from those collective experiences, I started to see what I thought was a gap in terms of how people who are customer facing have to work with core applications like CRM. You know, it's people work in a very natural way, but then they have to do something very unnatural and data entry and put this bit of information into that field, this drop down, things like that. Was frustrated with that experience. And then in the sales operations role, that's when I started to really see, well, if you do this, though, you can get a lot of great information. You can start to see what's going on in the business and leading indicators. And that insight really fascinated me. But I just saw this challenge of getting good information and as seamlessly as possible from the users. You know, that was the idea to say, hey, well, let's build something to kind of fix that at both ends, and resigned from SAP after an 11-year career solo and started the journey.
It's very interesting and very cool too that it sounds like the itch came about, the desire came about because you took sort of this circumnavigated view of a problem by saying yes or changing from consultant role to pre-sale role to sale role to sounds like sales operations type role. How did you walk us through how you were kind of okay with that, or what your thought process was as your career developed and you're like, yeah, I'll take on these other roles, and figured out the problem from many different angles? I got to believe is very valuable.
Yeah, it was. And part of this is a really good friend of mine, Vic Pant. He was 2 years older than me. He was always kind of like helping guide me through certain parts of my career. Yeah, a mentor, like a peer mentor, because he was not much older than me. And what we kind of recognized was when we first started doing some of the more technical aspects of the SAP consulting, we focused on brand new products, you know, not core ERP manufacturing. That I've never worked in a manufacturing role. I didn't know that. But at the time, it was a portal, like an enterprise portal, a NetWeave, like the integration layer. So it doesn't matter if I'm 22 and you're 42, this technology is like 6 months old. If I have 6 months worth of experience on it, I'm an expert. You know, your other 20 plus years don't really apply here. So I thought by focusing on technology early, that allowed me to play at a higher level. And then I was more drawn to the more business aspects, the sales aspects of it, presenting and just all that stuff. I thought was more enjoyable than necessarily getting even deeper into technology as a developer.
Very cool. And very few people make that, I guess, that transition of consulting technical background into I'm comfortable, I'm confident pitching an idea, leading a business, things like that. So how did you come to the decision of like, I want to start my own business and take on these hats of sales, marketing, you know, leadership, et cetera?
Yeah. I felt like after 11 years at SAP, I was doing pretty well, but I wasn't learning as much as I used to when I changed roles, and wanted to go a bit broader. Didn't want to focus in on a specific area. Didn't want to go and necessarily just be a sales rep. Never run a marketing campaign, right? I've never even thought about marketing messaging. I've never really handled customer success and retention, because at that time when I was at SAP, everything was more of the perpetual license. It wasn't SaaS and subscription. So, you know, that idea of wearing multiple hats is something that I'm always drawn to. And, you know, one of the things that I almost have to hold myself back from doing is trying to do too many different things. But that was the initial allure of being an entrepreneur, is you have to do so many different things.
as a career salesperson myself too, did you ever battle yourself between the sales and marketing mind within, like, internally?
yeah for sure. And for me, sales usually wins because I've more experience there, but I'm trying to get better at the marketing side and do things that are more scalable.
It's a pain point we see a lot in businesses, getting sales and marketing on the same page, collaborating, you know, towards similar goals, et cetera. So when you started the business, how did you start to think about like the team that you wanted to build, the culture you wanted to establish within Noted Analytics?
Sure. So one of the earlier realizations I had too was when I was in pre-sales, there could be a thought amongst people who are doing these demos that, wow, it must be so easy to be an account executive. You book a meeting and then you sit back and do nothing and let the expert talk. And then, right? Exactly. Right, and then when I was an account executive, like you see how much work it takes to get those meetings and all the prep that you need to do. But a lot of people who are just sellers will say, hey, Eric, I'm going to have you jump on and do a demo in 10 minutes. Is that okay? With no prep. Right. Because it's so easy. You just do the same demo over and over again. So, you know, I kind of had this thought that every sales rep should be a solution engineer. Every solution engineer should be a sales rep for like a week or something. Mm-hmm. And take that even further out, right? So people that are developers and engineers get a sense of what's it really like to be in sales, to pitch in front of people. Like how uncomfortable can that be? And the rejection of sending out emails and not getting replies and finally getting it, as well as people in sales, like understanding how difficult the work is that the developers are doing. So that first thing, most important to me, is that appreciation of these different roles and how everybody's working really hard and everyone's contributions are equally valuable.
So have you done that within your company then? Had people sort of take on those other roles to at least as a short stint to, because I think it's great, and I've had some experience that as well. And the moment that, like, the, you know, you hate to say aha moments, but sort of the those moments of, I didn't realize that this is what you have to go through to help me be set up for success and vice versa, I think is great for the team to understand the whole of what we're trying to do.
Yeah, exactly, Chet. And there's lots of ways that you can do that too. It's not give your developer a quota necessarily, right? it can be like shadowing on calls and hearing from the actual customer themselves. Back when there were more in-person events, I guess I could still do it now, but I used to do this previously, would go to AAISP, the American Associate Inside Sales Professionals, meetings with some of my developers, and they can just hear the conversations and get a sense of what is our customer going through? Who are they? And it's not more of like a functional spec, it's more of a person. This is their job they're doing. My co-founder, giving him opportunities to do interviews and present and do even small group presentations, just to get a sense of what that's like on the other side. I mean, I think it makes everyone better.
Well, the other thing I think it's cool too, because I've seen it happen, is sometimes they get energized by that because it's something new for them. And they feel like they're part of the overall team and the overall drive of the company rather than my role is just to do this.
Yeah. My piece in the, my cog in the big system, right? Even though it's a small company, it's still a small system, but not being limited to just your area.
Yeah. And did you find with that, because I'm always intrigued by it, did you find that sometimes they may have a different perspective, that they came up with an idea that, you know, hadn't been thought of because they're almost laying fresh eyes on that sort of a function?
Yeah, definitely. I think fresh eyes on the function. I think even just one of the things that I've been really fascinated with, I mean, I was in the space of consultants and solution engineers. It's still very business centric, right? It's technology, but it's still very much heavy on the business side, working with real hardcore engineers writing in Python and, you know, C++, that's a whole other side, right? Sure. That's not a solution engineer who's doing things in PowerPoint. So their minds are, I found, are just different anyway, more of that real engineering mindset. So I'm always very fascinated by the ideas they came up with and just the way they see and think through problems. It's absolutely different than the way I do.
Yeah, that's great.
No, I think you're hitting on something of you know, empathy being a core value, right? A core part of the culture, which I think is huge because we try to encourage that with our clients, right? Around, hey, do you understand the other person's point of view? Are you open-minded enough to engage and understand an idea or, you know, what they're going through day in and day out? And then if you do take that perspective, maybe you can add something to it. Maybe you can add value to it. As you've started the business and now started to grow the business a little bit and getting things off the ground, how have these things evolved? What have you seen either in your people or in your team as far as having that culture of, hey, I want you all to understand each other's roles and have a sense of teamwork that I'm not just part of that, a cog in the wheel?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the biggest benefits is just how we can problem solve. Really? It's absolutely. It's very easy when you have a challenge and let's say I'm just focusing on sales stuff and I don't communicate with them, or you know, one of our developers is working on a front end challenge versus a back end development challenge, just to kind of think about it in your own silo, in your own thoughts and views. But because we've all had some exposure, we come up with suggestions, and they're not always the right answer, but sometimes that suggestion triggers another thought, which leads to another thing. So, you know, I found since we've been doing that more, we get to solutions faster as a team, rather than just let me work on this myself and I'll let you know when I have an answer.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot, about the idea of a good idea can come from anywhere, but even if it's not a good idea, it can spark something. Something that you said it probably won't work, but it sparks something that will work that I wouldn't have thought of if you didn't say what you said. So I think that's great.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the whole idea of empathy too, I mean, I'm seeing, you can go in, on LinkedIn and see a ton of posts and blogs and articles about that. But I think beyond just people posting about that for posting's sake, it's changed big time in terms of the relationship between sellers and customers. I mean, it, in my earlier days in sales, talked about the perpetual license. They buy it once. You kind of don't really care if they use it to some extent or onto the next, right? That's someone else's job, support, things like that. Everything has changed with subscription and product-led growth and all these things that you have to make sure that the customer is getting value and you're keeping that relationship. And you know, I think back in the earlier part of sales, relationship was taking them golfing or going to a sporting event and steak dinners. And it's far less of that now, even prior to COVID, and more about relationships that are actually helping them do their job. And you're still building it, but it's not necessarily like, hey, let's just have fun. And then if you like me, you'll buy from me. It's, hey, you're actually helping me. And now when we get to the point when your solution might help me, I'm going to look to you for that solution. I mean, I think that's part of how empathy has changed in the industry as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's the buyer-seller relationship is evolving into more value add or just value. Are you bringing me value beyond just being likable, right? There was the old sales saying is people buy from people they like. That's still true, but I think they also buy from teams that they like and trust. And if you are a business owner, entrepreneur, leader, and your team is trusted by the clients, that does a lot more for the business in a way. Is that something that you've seen or you've started to experience with that sort of empathy value as a team?
Yeah. It changes almost the definition of why they like you.
Right. Yeah.
Previously, they like you because you were fun.
You
have the corporate credit card and you can go out and it's on the company per se. I started seeing that companies wouldn't even allow any of that type of stuff. Like you couldn't buy them more than $5 worth of lunch because, you know, just rules and regulations. So I think with that cut off that person's ability to work a deal. And focused on, well, now I like you, to your point, where you're helping me look better amongst my peers and my bosses. Like, I'm getting more done. You're a resource to me. You know, that whole consultative sell, trusted advisor, making that real and not just kind of like a buzzword.
Yeah. Yeah. And Matt, this is great. And I want to pivot real quick from the topic of being an entrepreneur and a founder of Noted Analytics, not to say that networking doesn't have a large part to do with being an entrepreneur, but talk to us about never lunch alone. We hit this pandemic and it's hard to connect with people. You're a former technical person turned salesperson turned entrepreneur trying to solve a problem. One thing that you've built out is a networking program. What do we call it? A global phenomenon?
Phenomenon, yeah.
A global phenomenon of Never Lunch Alone. And I've followed them. I've always clicked on them. I'm like, oh, this is so fascinating. We're all remote, yet he's still adamant about talking to somebody new, unique, and valuable, you know, every day or every week, you know, as often as you can to Never Lunch Alone. Tell us about that and the importance of networking for you, even in these difficult times.
Yeah,
how'd you come
yeah,
up with
absolutely.
It? What has it done for you?
Sure. I mean, I appreciate you the flattery on the show itself. So the idea of the show came from one weekend I was watching on Netflix. I was watching Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. Yep. Yeah, I was like, that's cool. Yeah. I like that. Yeah, just takes him out, very casual, not a formal interview, you know, per se. Just people talking shop, and he was talking about comedy. And I thought that would be a great thing to do with people in sales and marketing profession. And we first started doing these as in person in Boston, go to a restaurant, different restaurants, and have like two iPhones set up and recorded, and you know, and just kind of did it that way. And it was really to establish relationships with new people, as you mentioned. And it's also to learn. I was learning a ton. I didn't know much about sales enablement. For my previous roles. I mean, we'd get training once in a while or so, and a trainer would come in, and that was it. I never really saw the other aspects of sales operations, or I never really engaged much with chief marketing officers or even CROs. I work with my bosses and their directors and stuff. So I would have these interviews, learn a lot in the meeting, you know, kind of thinking about your question and stuff. But after going through and listening to it again, oh man, I'd learned so much information. And then the whole goal is things that I thought were interesting, I would then cut up into little chunks and sections and clips and post it out, hoping that other people would find that interesting. With the pandemic, then it became, well, we can't do this in person anymore, but that's a blessing too in some ways, in that I'm not limited to the local Boston geography or even just one person. Now we can maybe have this be on a particular topic, like discovery calls, and get three people on and bounce some ideas. Yeah. So we had to evolve it as given the current situation.
And truly be a global phenomenon.
Exactly.
That's fascinating. And I think you hit on something too, is the learning, right? Walking away from the conversation. You know, was the intent to provide, you know, your followers, your connections, your audience content, or was the initial thing like, hey, as a new entrepreneur, there was an admission of there's more I can learn, right? I want to pick people's brains. And what was the key driver for it for you?
Yeah, the key driver initially was content.
Was
content. Now, how do I get myself out there? How do I get known more? First started doing some posts, and I'd do some recordings where I'd record myself talking about something that I probably just read, you know, like an hour ago, right? Yep. So I was like, this doesn't feel that authentic, or maybe it's imposter syndrome. I didn't feel like I was that much of an expert to lay these great things out compared to some of the people out there. So I thought, well, how about I bring these amazing people that I find in? And in posting the content, It could be prospects. It could be people that I've known for a while, people that I look up to. And then just by posting content, tagging them and their company, now I'm known within their company. And so it was definitely a focus around content. I was surprised at actually how much I was learning from the conversations and subconsciously applying it then.
Yeah. That's great. And would you advise, so we've heard a consistent theme of for like younger professionals or people that are kind of at that trigger point or have that itch they want to scratch and they want to try something new, to get out and network, especially for the younger professionals, even college students who are going into this economy that is very tough to connect in the traditional way. So it's a virtual connection. And we're seeing things like this pop up. I have a friend who does, I have a question, right? And it's just a, you know, 5-minute, you know, video clip of him asking a question that he's interested in. What advice would you give somebody either younger or wanting to kind of change course or evolve their career with that step in networking to think about when they're like, hey, I want to be more networked or expand my network with a larger reach, further reach. What'd you do to overcome or come up with that idea of like, hey, never lunch alone? You mentioned it was something that just kind of triggered for you, but how did you make it your own? How did you make it genuine, I guess, when you were like, oh, I was starting to do this, and then it didn't feel that, it felt scripted. It didn't feel too genuine. So what advice would you have for folks like that trying to network further?
Yeah. Great question. I would say in terms of networking, first thing I would do is audit your day, your week, and really look at where are you spending time. And if you could identify some time that maybe you were watching Netflix, or even though that was my inspiration, right? But if you could kind of look at time that you're doing something that's maybe not improving yourself, instead of watching Netflix for 2 hours or so, listen to an audiobook, join Clubhouse and follow some rooms. Just look at what people are posting on LinkedIn and engage. So it doesn't have to be a big, profound thing, but start there, right, in getting some ideas. Then once you start to have some ideas, just do it. I mean, you could fall into paralysis analysis and not do anything. I only knew that the content that I was pushing out there felt inauthentic when I started pushing it out there, right? I wouldn't have known that thinking about it. As I started doing it, low engagements, I was like, all right, this doesn't feel quite right. I'm not seeing a lot of results. And then just evolve and iterate. I think I can almost try and make things too perfect and have it take up too much time. But in the very beginning, when you're pushing stuff out there, no one's gonna look at it anyway, right? So it's like, yeah, get it out there and learn and improve.
Right.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because like we talk a lot about psychological safety and things like that along for a team, that there's gonna be psychological safety that I can put my idea out there so that we can capitalize on it. I can share what I'm thinking. And it's interesting what you're saying, and I think it's really true. We almost have to be psychologically safe with ourselves of like, okay, I should take this chance. You know, I rather than self-edit, it's not going to work. It's like, give yourself the safety of like, no, just, you got to do it. You got to do it to find out what's going to work and not. You can, otherwise it's never going to happen if you don't actually try it.
Yeah. Yeah. The timing will never be right. Same thing with being a startup founder. A lot of times I'll speak to people who are in the idea stage and they don't want to tell you their idea because you're going to steal it. It's like, I'm not going to steal your idea, right? I'm just, like, everyone holds their ideas as so secret. And, you know, chances are it's totally fine telling people your idea, getting that feedback, what you'll learn, who they'll connect you to, and how it'll evolve, more so than the threat of somebody taking your idea and then dropping everything they're doing to devote their life to it, right? That's hard to do for your own idea, let alone someone else's idea.
Right, right.
The advice that 95% of it is in the execution of it. And it's like, I'm too busy to execute on your idea. And probably somebody's already had the idea. They just haven't executed on it the way that you potentially could. It's just, do you want to do that?
Exactly.
And so best of luck in your continued pursuit and building the team. We really appreciate you joining us today and hope to talk to you again.
Guys, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it.
Our thanks again to Matt Walsh. We really enjoyed talking with him. He's a great guy and fun to have on our podcast. And just as a reminder, too, I think one of my takeaways, too, that I really like from it is the idea of, instead of binge watching another episode of something on Netflix, to think about doing something to improve yourself or improve your team, because there are things out there.
I can be guilty of binge watching Netflix, let me tell you.
Oh, I think we all can. And, you know, that comes to like the idea of self-care and making sure you take care of yourself. But as well, you know, there are small things, and even some of the, it ties back to even what Larry was talking about, some of the reading he does, that we can constantly be learning and kind of improving ourselves. So I really enjoyed that. So that was one of my key takeaways as well, was to kind of refocus on that a little bit.
So thanks again for listening. Check out our website at amplifiedteam.com. You can check out our social media channels on Instagram and Twitter, as well as Facebook at Amplified Team for our handles. And we will see you guys again on our next podcast.